Funding for this edition of Think Tank with Steve Adubato has been provided by Wells Fargo, Fedway Associates, Inc., MD Advantage Insurance Company, Englewood Health, the New Jersey Economic Development Authority, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, here when you need us most, now and always. Choose New Jersey, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and by Johnson & Johnson. Promotional support provided by NJ.com, keeping communities informed and connected. And by Insider NJ.
Welcome, folks, to a very special edition of Think Tank here on News 12 Plus. We kick off the program with our good friend Joe Fiordaliso, who is the president of the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities. Joe, we're doing a program here. You're in the middle segment, but that segment talks all about energy policy in the state. Why is that discussion so important, A, and B, what's the role of the BPU in changing energy policy in our future?
It's so important, Steve, primarily because of the challenges that we face regarding climate change. And we're in the middle, really not in the middle, but in the throes of an energy revolution, where by 2050, we want 100% clean energy generating our energy. And the way we do that is, number one, energy efficiency. Telling people how they can save energy and how they can reduce the consumption of energy, hence reduce the cost. Two, continue with our initiatives with offshore wind, which ultimately, once we have completed our offshore wind installation by 2035, we will be generating energy for millions of New Jersey homes. Number three, our solar industry. We have over 148,000 solar installations in the state of New Jersey, the most solar installations per square mile of any state in the union. And why is this all important? To mitigate the effects of climate change. And we will continue under the governor's vision and direction, promote clean energy. Board of Public Utilities is a regulatory body. We regulate all investor-owned utilities. We're also the clean energy office for the state of New Jersey.
Yep.
So all of the initiatives on the clean energy side come through this office. And it is a very exciting and challenging adventure that we're in right now that will hopefully protect future generations.
And by the way, the BPU's website's been up the entire time. We have an initiative in which we're creating greater public awareness around clean energy issues. And Joe, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And we appreciate you teeing up, if you will, this special edition of Think Tank here on News 12 Plus. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Steve.
And this is Think Tank. Hi, I'm Steve Adubato. Welcome to a very important program. We kick off with our longtime friend, Carlos Medina, who is the president and of the statewide Hispanic Chamber of Commerce of New Jersey, and of course, the executive producer and host of a great show on NJ PBS, and it's called Que Pasa NJ. Good to see you, Carlos.
Great to see you always, Steve.
You got it. Hey, listen, people don't know Que Pasa NJ. Let them know what it is, where to find it, and why it's great viewing.
Sure. We completed season two, and we are looking at our contract for season three. And, you know, I'm a Jersey guy like you, Steve, so it's kind of Jersey through my lens. You know, obviously my upbringing was different. Immigrants, my dad's from Cuba, my mom's from Puerto Rico, grew up in Hudson County. So just putting a positive spotlight on Hispanic leaders and their allies in New Jersey primarily, and then some that are in the tri-state area.
Some of the guests and topics you've explored.
Obviously, diversity is top of mind, the business success, overcoming obstacles. You know, we've had Senator Menendez on, we've had Senator Booker, we've had allies like Mayor Fulop and Luis Miranda, dad of Lin-Manuel Miranda, who's, you know, a legendary businessman in the tri-state area. So it's been fun. It's been fun to introduce our audience to different hidden gems in the area.
Cost, talk about this, because you and I have had this conversation offline, and because we are independent producers, as you are, but we're colleagues and work very closely with the public television family. I don't know if people understand this, and I won't get into the weeds on this, but at least 50 to 60% of my time, I mean, this is the fun part, and I know you feel the same way about being a host on your end. 50 to 60% of my time is spent raising money, securing money, keeping those dollars in place to keep the team going, to keep the broadcast going. Is it different for you because people are throwing money at you? Because that would be great.
No, it's complicated, Steve. And yeah, it's a labor of love. I do it through a nonprofit entity. So yeah, it's challenging raising money and even dealing with some talent and agents. And it's a lot of walking through quicksand or trying to move through quicksand to get things done. But at the end of the day, like you said, it's very rewarding to see the final product, but a lot of the work is the 90% behind the camera and behind the scenes.
Yeah, but you do know about business, and the chamber, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, has been helping, supporting, being there for small businesses for so long, any kind of business. Talk about the growth in the business community, the Hispanic business community, A, and B, the impact of COVID as we get 2 years and beyond into this.
It's, the numbers, the last census shows that New Jersey's 21.6% Hispanic, and those are those that filled out. So I feel that number is even higher, but a very impressive number. And we just keep on growing. The Hispanic business population is doubling and tripling. Back in 2009, when we had our last recession, Hispanic businesses were growing while Main Street businesses were stagnant. And there's an argument to be made that Hispanic businesses drove us out of that recession. I'd make the same argument now, Steve. We're in a COVID recession. Businesses are struggling. Hispanic businesses, we just had our gala recently, and the business of the year has opened up multiple new restaurants in the midst of a pandemic. And that's really up and down from mom and pop shops up to large, you know, law firms and corporations that are Hispanic owned. They're all, you know, really working during the pandemic to keep the economy going, keep their employees, you know, with a steady source of income. You know, that one restaurant would feed and send the food home to all of the families of folks that worked for him. So it's just an example of, you know, a close-knit immigrant community, similar to the Italian immigrant community in Newark many years ago. So I think immigrant communities always share that, you know, love of family, love of hard work. And as cycles come in and different waves of immigrants come in, sometimes we forget the trials and tribulations that those that came before us had.
Yeah, actually, we have an interview with Laura. Maria Lorino, who wrote a wonderful book about the Italian immigrant experience, which my grandfather came here in 1921. My mom and I confirmed this yesterday. In 1923, the United States shut down, largely shut down immigration from European countries, Italy being one of them. And as I read about that history of immigration policy, largely dictated to stop more Italians from coming here, it strikes me as awfully similar to what's going on right now. That being said, forget about my people. Let's talk about this. The resistance in the African-American and Hispanic community, we also had you, and John Harmon, who is the president of the African-American Chamber, on talking about resistance in Black and brown communities. Do you sense, Carlos, that where we are at the end of 2021, this will be seen after, that the level of resistance to vaccines from COVID is less than what it was, A, and B, the impact on the economic vitality of the Hispanic community?
I think it is. There is less resistance today from the last time that we spoke, Steve. And the impact has been, you know, there's been a heavy impact on businesses. The EDA was another award winner at the gala, I will mention.
Economic Development Authority, Tim Sullivan and the team.
Tim Sullivan, Ty Cooper, they've been amazing partners of the chamber and helped us get a lot of the grant monies and the Small Business Administration payroll protection plan money into our members' hands by partnering with us, by trying to get things in English and in Spanish, and getting them into communities that generally don't have access to these type of programs. And I think they did a fantastic job, honestly, making sure they partnered with John Harmon, with a veteran chamber, with diverse chambers, with small businesses in general, up and down Main Street.
Any big corporate support? We don't want to be plugging because we're all in the fundraising business, but any big corporate support?
Yeah, this year, you know, Wells Fargo, PNC Bank, the banks have been heavy supporters, Horizon Blue Cross. It's been, yeah, we've had a lot of corporations realize the struggle and also realize these, with these numbers that the census is showing, these are potential clients, consumers, customers that corporations want to make sure they're engaged with. So it is philanthropy, but it's also good business.
It sure is. Hey, Carlos, do me a favor. NJPBS, our terrific public broadcasting operation, Joe Lee, now the general manager, Neil Shapiro, our leader overall. Tell everyone when people can see Que Pasa NJ on NJPBS.
We'll be starting up again, hopefully March of 22. And it's generally the last Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. on NJPBS. And immediately after that, about a day after, it could be on the landing page on pbs.org, where we have all of our episodes archived.
And we'll put up your website throughout so people can find out more. Hey, Carlos, all the best to you and your family in the new year. We look forward to more conversations.
Likewise, Steve. God bless.
Same to you. We'll be right back after this.
To watch more Think Tank with Steve Adubato, find us online and follow us on social media.
We welcome back Joe Fiordaliso, is the president of the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities. Good to see you, Mr. President.
Good to see you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. We've had a series of conversations about energy policy. We're involved in a public awareness initiative around clean energy. But let me ask you this. Describe succinctly the Governor Murphy's energy master plan as it relates to getting to net zero carbon emissions by 2030.
Well, it's a very detailed energy master plan, which we're going to be updating, by the way, Steve, in 2022. And it relies heavily on energy efficiency. It relies heavily on our continuing initiative as far as offshore wind is concerned. On our solar initiatives, we have over 148,000 solar installations in the state of New Jersey, more solar installations per square mile than any state in the union. We have included in the solar, our community solar program, which is focused on underserved communities to provide environmental justice. And so on. Every New Jerseyan should have an opportunity to participate in the energy revolution that we're currently in.
Mr. President, help me understand this. The New Jersey Wind Port, succinctly, what is it down in Salem County and why does it matter?
Well, it matters for a number of reasons. Number one, it's going to be a manufacturing center. Manufacturing is coming back to New Jersey rather than exiting New Jersey because of this. Number two, the economic enhancement that it's going to bring not only to South Jersey, but to New Jersey generally, and the thousands of jobs that it's going to provide for people here in the state of New Jersey. Steve, New Jersey geographically is positioned so well to be the supply chain for the entire East Coast offshore wind industry. And that is our primary goal. The primary goals. I don't know if you can have more than one primary goal, but there's a lot of them here. And that's one of the goals, is to make us the supply chain for the offshore wind industry.
Joe, why do you say that the climate change situation is a, quote, code red situation?
Because it is. As you know, and you're referring to the United Nations International Panel report calling it a code red And they're talking about a code red, Steve, not only not for the next 100 years that it's going to happen, but for this decade. We are seeing changes in our environment, in our weather patterns, that we have never seen before. And if we're going to leave any legacy for my grandchildren, for your children, for your grandchildren, and subsequent generations, it's got to be how we tried to mitigate the effects of climate change. The mitigation of climate change is the number one challenge internationally that we have. We have to preserve this planet. And if we continue on the track that we're currently on, we're not going to preserve this planet. And it's going to change the way we live. It's going to change the way we eat. It's going to change our economic standing. It's going to change our entire life. So we have an obligation. And I would suggest to you that we have a moral obligation to future generations.
But, you know, Joe, devil's advocate, we've had people on who have said, listen, philosophically, we agree with the governor's energy master plan. We understand we need to fight against climate change and deal with it directly. But the pace is too quick. The cost is too great. It costs too much to do what you and the governor are talking about. And you're moving too quickly. And we're going to wind up not meeting the deadlines that have been set and short of the energy we need, you say.
I say the cost of doing nothing is not an option. Not an option. We have to save this planet. And I'm not talking hyperbole here. Number one, we have to save this planet. And I hear from groups on both sides of that equation, Steve, those who say we're moving too fast and those who say we're not moving fast enough. We try to be, and I think we are, prudent in our approach. Always have the ratepayer in mind, because it's you and I as ratepayers that are paying for this. So it's vitally important that we hopefully get the word across to all segments of our population how important this is and how we have to work it together. That's why
I'm sorry for interrupting, Joe, but will consumer energy costs go up in order to implement the governor's energy master plan?
Eventually they may well go up. However, let me give you this statistic. As these industries mature, the cost is going to come down.
How so?
Solar as an example. Competition. That's how so. Solar as an example. I can build a solar installation today for half the cost of what it was in 2007. Competition. Developers coming in. The free market determining the cost. To a large extent. Same thing's going to happen with offshore wind. Energy efficiency. The cheapest energy is the energy you don't use. Energy efficiency is a cornerstone of our initiative. We want people to save energy. And there are ways we can do that.
Energy. Good. Final point, because I want to ask you about the community energy plan. Go ahead.
Sure. No. We want to do energy audits of your home, see where we can save that energy, energy efficiency appliances, et cetera. So there are ways we can save energy where the cost doesn't go up.
And Joe, give me 30 seconds on the community energy plan. What is it?
Community solar energy plan is generally geared toward our urban areas, and people can literally buy into it. A developer comes in, constructs a solar array, and people can buy into it to get their energy. And it allows and gives people an opportunity to be a part of the energy revolution that we're currently in and save some money along the way.
And it deals with issues of inequities around social justice and energy policy, et cetera. Joe Fiordaliso is the president of the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities. Mr. President, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Steve, thank you again for having me.
I'm Steve Adubato. Thank you so much. That's the president. I'm Steve Adubato. We'll be right back.
To watch more Think Tank with Steve Adubato, find us online and follow us on social media.
The Caucus Educational Corporation and our partners in public broadcasting want to say thank you to State Senator Christopher Kip Bateman, Republican from the 16th Legislative District, for his four decades of public service, his many years in the state legislature, for his service. He's stepping down as we do this program at the end of 2021. By the time this airs, you'll be former senator. Thank you for your service, Kip.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a great honor and privilege to represent Branchburg Township, Somerset County, and the 16th Legislative District for the last 39 years.
Yeah. By the way, I call the Senator Kip. We're longtime friends. We go back a long way. But I want to ask you this, Senator. As you leave public life in this arena right now, as a longstanding Republican and member of the legislature, public servant, how much different, and your dad, the great Ray Bateman, who ran for governor, was a leader in the Senate, who was a mentor of mine as a young guy in government and politics. Question, how much different is politics and is governing in the state house today versus just say 10 years ago?
It's a lot different, Steve. It's more polarized and, you know, it's become even more political and we're losing focus on some of the issues. And, you know, this whole thing with the vaccines and, you know, the proof that you had your card last week with some of the assembly members. I mean, I think it detracts from some of the issues that are important to New Jerseyans, you know, the affordability and taxes. We really need to be working in a bipartisan manner to try to solve some of those. It's changed a lot. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I noticed a big difference from when I first went to the legislature back in 93 to now. And, you know, I still have friends on both sides of the aisle, but you don't see that as much. And you know, Washington's much worse, but, New Jersey right now, we're at a crossroads and we really need to work together because New Jersey is a great state to raise a family and educate your children, but it's become very expensive and affordability is a big issue.
It sure is, but I'm curious about this. There's no one factor involved here, Kip, but when do you believe it started that our political opponents, those who had a different point of view or potentially of a different party, became our enemies, literally, not just our political enemies, but our personal enemies, and that we wished bad things for them and their families. When the heck did that happen?
Well, I think a lot had to do with, you know, the Trump years. I got to be honest with you. And I think that now, like, I don't even talk politics with my family. Most of my family agree with a lot of my.
I'm tapping out. I don't either.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. And it's unfortunate you can't even have a good discussion about politics anymore. And, you know, I think when, you know, Trump was, and I was never a big supporter, when he was in the White House, I think it really polarized the country. And let me tell you, the people who like him love him. But, you know, very, very difficult, I think, to discuss politics. I mean, you know, families don't talk to each other now over the last presidential election.
Much less friends.
And you know, you see some of that trend, but it's still not healthy for the country. It's not healthy for New Jersey.
But Kip, I'm trying to get my head around this one. For moderate conservative Republicans like you, who I'm going to argue did not vote for Democratic presidential candidates a whole lot in your life, if at all, much less governors. Where is the place for a moderate / conservative, legitimate conservative Republican in a Republican Party that is dominated by President Trump and a very different brand of politics? Where is that place? Just in New Jersey.
It's a difficult place, Steve. I got to be honest with you. And one of my colleagues in the Senate years ago, a couple of years back, said, you know, Kip, you're a moderate Republican. You're a dying breed in New Jersey. And you know what? He was right. I mean, the problem is, you know, you have the far left and you have the far right. I think most people are somewhere in the middle. But it's hard to find moderate Republicans these days. And, you know, in my caucus in the Senate, there are only a few of us. And, you know, I respect the conservatives, but I just think that more people are like in the middle of the road. And it's just very difficult because, you know, the party of like Ray Bateman and Christy Todd Whitman and
Tom Kaine,
you know, and to some degree, Chris Christie, you know, you don't see that as much anymore. And, you know, we've gone further right. A lot of the Republicans have gone further right. And you know, I think that was one of the issues Jack had in the campaign.
He had to walk
a fine line between the Trumpers and the moderates. And it's a difficult line to walk right now, because, you know, to win a primary, you really need to be more conservative. But to win a general election in New Jersey, you got to be more moderate in the middle of the road.
Senator, let me try this. Beyond all the political polarization, I keep thinking there are certain issues, certain topics that we can come together on. So we've been involved in an initiative called Reimagine Childcare for many, many years, talking about quality, affordable, accessible childcare. But particularly in 2022, its connection to the economy, economic recovery, economic vitality, allowing women disproportionately and men to go to work and know their children are taken care of. Not a partisan issue at all.
No, definitely not. I mean, you know, there's nothing more important to individuals, especially parents, than the education of their children. And you know what? You want them to get the best education you can. And, you know, politics should play a role in that. And someone in Newark should have the same opportunity as someone in Branchburg Township to get a great education. And I think those are the kind of issues that I think we can center around together. I mean, and the environment is another perfect example. I mean, especially what's happening now with global warming and the devastation down south in Kentucky. I mean, that's an issue that I found that, you know, it's not a partisan issue. And I work very closely with Senator Smith and Assemblyman John McKeon and Senator Sweeney.
Senator Smith, who chairs the Senate Environment Committee. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
He and I did several major bills. And one of the most important things that I did in the legislature was when we were able to pass on the ballot in 21 counties, so permanent funding for open space, farmland preservation, blue acres, historic preservation. It wasn't a partisan issue. It was an issue that was so important to everybody. And, you know, it passed 2-1. And it tells you, and people don't usually like to spend money, but when they vote for something that's going to cost them money, you know, it's important. And so those are the kind of issues that we should try to get together on behind. And you know what? I think to solve the problems in New Jersey, solve the problems in the country, we have to do that.
Got a minute left. I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Sir, what's the reason to be optimistic? So give me a silver lining. Come on. 4 decades in public life. I don't know anyone who doesn't respect your point of view. Silver lining. Go ahead.
I think that the majority of the legislators that I work with in Trenton and have worked with are there for the right reasons. Listen, there's always politics involved, but I think that the people who have decided to run for public office because they believe in New Jersey and they believe in a better New Jersey. And I think that at the end of the day, they can put the politics aside and try to solve some of the difficult problems. And I'm always one who's optimistic. The glass is always half full. So listen, I'm hopeful that it will get better in the future and that we can straighten this state out and make it more affordable. Because, you know, I want my grandchildren to stay in New Jersey. I don't want them to leave. I don't want to leave New Jersey. But you know what? It's an issue that's important to everybody, affordability. So,
Senator Christopher Kip Bateman, 4 decades in public life, 12 years in the state Senate. And as they say, once a senator, always a senator. And
I hope so.
What's that?
I hope so. I hope people still senator and remember me, I hope.
Yeah, well way more important than the title is the impact. And it's not about agreeing on all the issues. It's about doing it for the right reasons and trying to make a difference in people's lives. Kip, I wish you and your family all the best. And thank you for your service to the state.
Thank you, Steve. It's always a pleasure being with you. Thank you.
My pleasure as well. That's Senator Kip Bateman. Steve Adubato. See you next time.
Think Tank with Steve Adubato has been a production of the Caucus Educational Corporation. Funding has been provided by Wells Fargo, Fedway Associates, Inc., MD Advantage Insurance Company, Englewood Health, the New Jersey Economic Development Authority, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and by Johnson & Johnson. Promotional support provided by NJ.com and by Insider NJ.
It only gets better when we stand together to tough through and get by.